Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to be back with you. On this show, we question everything. We're not run by billionaires, and we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. So tonight, when we dive into the big stories of the day, we're going to be looking at stories that the mainstream media is covering, but we're probably going to show you sides that you might not have thought about or considered as we look at what's unfolding right now in Israel. Because the very latest, of course, is that Israel, over the past few minutes, has made an announcement that they are very much actively preparing for this invasion. Antony Blinken is in town. They had to go into a bunker as air raid sirens just went off over Tel Aviv. And apparently they were in war game planning as to what exactly they're going to do in Gaza. So we'll bring you the very latest on that.
Plus, there's a lot of I told you so to be said, not from us, but others who've been reporting that weapon aid to Ukraine would make it to extremists in the Middle East. We're going to bring you that story again and prove that the United States has weaponry on both sides of this conflict in Israel, paid for by U.S. tax dollars.
Also, while you were, carrying on with your day, Syria has been attacked once again. This is a story, of course, the Western media totally ignores. They pretend like Syria doesn't exist. They pretend like the United States should be actively invading Syria and that it's some sort of a terrorist hotbed. Of course, you guys are smarter than that, and you know the truth about that. But yeah, Syria was attacked again. So Kevork Almasian is going to join us in a little bit here to talk about the attacks on Syria.
Plus, we are also going to talk about what happens when you are no longer the A-list war leader. That's what Zelensky's showing us. It plays out very much like an episode of The Comeback.
Don't forget about me.
By Lisa Kudrow.
Yeah.
Remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, it's kind of fun. But we're going to look at what Ukraine may do to turn the camera back to this conflict. Will it be dangerous or will it be pathetic? We'll let you decide what you think in the chat. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now.
Welcome in. It's been a little while. Of course, we were out. We were very sick, and we are glad to be back. And someone in the chat just before the show started, I think the MG Power said, every time Redacted is off and takes a few days off, holy smokes, the world catches on fire. David said that to me over the weekend. He's like, my God, every time we're off for a little bit,
yeah,
seems like all hell breaks loose.
The last time we took off, it was a Trump federal indictment, the first of four.
Yeah.
Ratcheting up of war in Ukraine. It could not be helped. But I would like to say this. I probably, like everybody else, was watching social media, watching the news with just so much anticipation. And I cannot believe how much tribal signaling there is right now. I cannot believe how the Western media wants you to choose one group of people to have empathy for. And if you choose, that means you cannot have empathy for the other group. That is something that I wholeheartedly reject. I will not be using names of groups of people to say one group of people did something to the other. What we're looking at is world leaders making decisions that are hurting civilians.
Yes.
Civilians being harmed for decisions that their government are making. We are not here to choose a side that will feed into anybody's preconceived notions of anything. I do not believe that there is a limit on empathy that we can have for only one group of people. So if you're here to hear us say one side or the other, and if you express sympathy for one, you cannot have it for another, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, that's not what we do on this show. So we also like to turn over stones that are uncomfortable, by the way, and look at things that people don't want to talk about, the mainstream media will not talk about. So we're going to get to all of that and more, but we have a daily news letter. We are back. The daily newsletter is back. Yes, it is the world's greatest newsletter. And so many of people, I received hundreds of emails from people saying, where's the newsletter? So thank you. We are back. We are back. We were just very, very sick. Anyway, you can now get it. All you need to do to get the daily newsletter, you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee in the morning. It's a great newsletter. Brings you up to speed on the events of the day. just go to redacted.inc, put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email. You have to confirm it, though. It might wind up in your spam folder. Gmail has labeled us as dangerous. So Google has labeled us as dangerous. It might wind up in your like dangerous folder. Just drag it over to your inbox and give the big middle finger to Google and say, no, I do want to read this newsletter. I want to get some truth out there. So again, you can read it in about 5 minutes. Again, all you need to do to sign up is go to redacted.inc, get the newsletter, and it'll be delivered to your inbox first thing manana. Okay. Well, let's get started. So shortly before we came on the air, we did get new updates just a few minutes ago that shelters in Gaza have run out of water. So this we want to bring to you. This is these are just a few pieces of breaking news that we're getting here just off the start of the show. So water runs out at UN shelters in Gaza, and medics are fearing for patients as, of course, this Israeli ground offensive looms. And also, we just got word a few minutes ago, shortly before we started, that Israel has bombed the Rafah border crossing. This is incredibly important, as you can see here. This is the border crossing being attacked. Now, this has been attacked multiple times over the past week. On Tuesday, it was attacked a couple of times, and that was confirmed by the Israeli press. So this is not a conspiracy theory. This was the Israeli press confirming this. The Rafah border crossing, of course, connects to Egypt, and they bombed there twice on Tuesday. So basically, sorry, you know, no food, water, or supplies, any kind of aid from Egypt is not going to be crossing that border. Infrastructure is not there. Here you can see all of the trucks that are lined up on the Egyptian side. This is Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing. You can see the line of trucks, ambulances, water, food, aid, ready to cross. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
Now, I do have a question about this water bit, though, because we've brought you the research of Seth Siegel about how Israel has a lot of advanced technology around water desalinization, water filtration, and those kind of things, and how they have never been able to peacefully coexist with the people of Gaza over water rights. Now, what they're saying is that Israel turned off the water to Gaza. But reporting showed that Gaza never actually got a lot of water from Israel because Hamas was loath to work with Israel. And they have a shallow aquifer that has been polluted by runoff from pesticides and sewage. But most apartment buildings have wells. Now, we've seen most of those civilian apartment buildings, though, have been bombed out. So did the wells go with those? Do they have any other way to tap into that aquifer? These are interesting questions that are not being answered because we're just being told that it's Israel who turned off this water as a war crime. So this is just a lingering question because it's something that we have studied collectively.
So now there are reports. This could be Hamas having blocked a portion of this exit, the Rafah border crossing there, and that's why they were being targeted by Israeli airstrikes. So they're, you know, that this was nothing more than that, that they were attacking Hamas, which has been blocking people from going to the border. So, but they've already hit this site multiple times. So that is the very latest on that. So as we await Israel's impending invasion of Gaza, we're also watching the United States sending another carrier strike group into Israel. And guys, this impending war is coming. This is about to happen. This is, you know, not unlike what we saw back in, you know, a number of years ago in a similar situation, the United States sending these carrier strike groups into this area. So, though, don't you guys get the feeling, though, that we are all being played like a fiddle right now by the deep state that desperately wants a regional war here, that using any major catalyst they can get their hands on right now, they can use to justify an invasion of Syria, Iran, Lebanon, Somalia? We've already invaded two of those countries, by the way. So those are two that we've already checked off the list, Syria and Somalia. Do we just need Iran and we need Lebanon now? That's who we need to invade. Like, we've checked most of the boxes. Let's just round out the crossword puzzle.
Well, right. And so what, you know, I've been completely interested in is who's going to be handed power from this conflict, right? And so Benjamin Netanyahu, who is facing very vociferous protests from his own people about power grabs has now been handed wartime powers. Will those be receded? Will Netanyahu now have unconditional power inside of his government? These are important questions to watch because we saw so many power grabs after 9/11 and those powers of surveillance, powers of declaring war without congressional approval have never been given back. And so we want to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past after a terror attack. But it seems like, no one's keeping a spreadsheet here.
So I think we are. It sure to me feels like we're being played like a fiddle. Let me know in the comments below. But many of you are saying, yes, the same thing. I mean, we are being played right now. And when all the major networks and intelligence backed newspapers start using the same talking point, something seems a little off, doesn't it? The term Pearl Harbor is being used an awful lot over the past few days from U.S. officials and Israeli officials, almost like they're reading off of the same talking points.
It's been said, but you could say that it is a 9/11 and a Pearl Harbor together for us.
If I just put this on a scale of the Americans being hit on 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, if you put those dead together.
They are telling me this is their Pearl Harbor.
Oh, their Pearl Harbor. U.S. intelligence-backed Rolling Stone magazine working in lockstep on these talking points as well. Here's their headline. This is a Pearl Harbor moment for Israel. And newspapers parroted this all across the United States. Just looking at this. I mean, all of these different headlines. So why were they... Here's another one that says, after Israel's Pearl Harbor, nothing less than victory against Hamas is demanded. So why are they saying this? Because we need another Pearl Harbor. We need a, quote, new Pearl Harbor. Those aren't my words. Those are the words straight out of a neocon think tank playbook in Washington written in their own blueprint documents from the year 1998. It was a blueprint for how to catalyze the world into action. Now, this think tank is called the Project for a New American Century, a think tank we've profiled extensively here on Redacted in the past, warmongers as they are. And as Zero Hedge explains, the Project for a New American Century was made up of the worst of the worst warmongering neocons you could think of. Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, all of these clowns would, of course, go on to serve the George W. Bush administration. And their pre-9/11 plans to explode the size of the U.S. military budget once communism was no longer a threat, that was to find a, quote, new Pearl Harbor. That was their plan, a justification to send billions to Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, and Boeing. They wrote it all down. This was in their plans. And they got their Pearl Harbor moment, of course, right, in the form of the 9/11 attacks, a catalyzing moment.
Well, I was going to say, what's funny about this is that they're basically saying exactly what they're doing, because we now know the truth behind Pearl Harbor and 9/11 that came out, history shows. And so they're basically saying this is basically the same thing. So they're admitting, I'm not going to say exactly what they're, but you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yes. And it's not a conspiracy theory anymore. I mean, and this is being used. This is being used as a catalyzing moment that could turn the page away from communism towards a new threat. The Middle Eastern terrorists, guys by the name of Al Qaeda, guys that we were openly friendly with and created and funded. We used to invite Al Qaeda and his friends over to our house for beers. Right. That's how cozy we were with them. Osama bin Laden was our friend. They ended up being great patsies, though, right? Taking the fall for the 9/11 attacks. Mm-hmm. The largest windfall of profits for the defense industrial complex in history. And we were able to build dozens of new military bases in the Middle East, thanks to our good friend Al.
By many reports, Saddam Hussein took lists from the CIA, kill lists.
Yes.
Okay, got those.
Yeah,
thanks.
We actively worked with them, shook hands with them. Donald Rumsfeld, famously chummy, the famous videos of Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands and hugging Saddam Hussein. So this idea that...
Well, on 9/11, the first people that they flew out of the country were the bin Ladens. Do you remember that on Fahrenheit 9/11? Like they got the bin Laden family out of the country.
I forgot about that. So this is the rhetoric, right, that we're seeing now. And, I was in grad school at the time. I remember I lived in Los Angeles, all the flags on cars. Do you remember that? Flags on car antennas, American flags.
Oh, after flags everywhere.
Flags everywhere. So the equivalency of that now is flags in your social media profile, right?
Right.
And so I think a lot about that because I was I don't know, I was in early 20s, like 22. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what I should do. So I picked up one of those flags and I put it in. And I think a lot about like, what was I trying to say back then? That we are a collective America that I stand for, right? What I did not mean is that you should then survey us, tap our phones and read our emails in order to see who is a terrorist and who is not, and make major war crimes across any Arab speaking country. That's not what I meant by that flag, right? And so I look at these flags in social media profiles now and I think, can you pull that thread and get there, right? If your profile picture is Ukraine, then are you pulling the thread into justifying war powers?
Right. So Hamas, also a big piece of this puzzle. Hamas, sure, was also our friend. They had no weapons until we gave them weapons. We created them. We funded them. We did this alongside the Israelis who funded Hamas. This, of course, is well documented. Any idiot knows this by now. Israeli Defense Forces Brigadier General Yitzhak Segev explained this to the New York Times. He was interviewed in 1981. This is well documented. He was tasked at the time by giving Hamas money, funneling it through mosques. You can read the interview. It's a great interview. Where have I heard this all before? Oh, right. We use the exact same strategy with Al-Qaeda. Former Senator Ron Paul told all of us on the floor of Congress how Hamas came to be.
If you look at the history, you'll find out that Hamas was encouraged and really started by Israel because they wanted Hamas to counteract Yasser Arafat. And he said, well, yeah, that was better then and served his purpose, but we didn't want Hamas to do this. So then we as Americans say, well, we have such a good system, we're going to impose this on the world. We're going to invade Iraq and teach people how to be Democrats. We want free elections. So we encourage the Palestinians to have a free election. They do, and they elect Hamas. So we first indirectly and directly through Israel help establish Hamas. Then we have election. Then Hamas becomes dominant, so we have to kill them. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, does it? We use them for a while to go up against Yasser Arafat, a guy who we always thought was shady. We didn't like the Palestinian Liberation Organization. We didn't like the PLO, right? So we thought of them as, this is an opportunity to use them as a hedge, right? We'll fund Hamas. We'll give them weapons. They had one gun before we came into town. So,
well, part of the narrative I see a lot of people talking about is the fact that, hey, the Palestinians voted them in, so they're guilty because they got Hamas in, but only 7% of the people actually voted them in. And once they gained power in 2007, I believe it was, they ended elections.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's the argument, right? Is that, well, you voted them into power. It's, you know, it's the same argument that, you know, people are making about Germany. You know, the Third Reich, they actually won at the ballot box, and that's how they came to power. People voted for them.
Plus 50% of the population are children. They cannot vote. In the same way that historically, the Palestinian leaders who rejected the 1948 accords that would have granted them land sharing with Israel, those same leaders did not enjoy popular support either. So, right. Again, what we're seeing is civilians being harmed because of the choices of politicians.
And what I'm saying is we're all being played here, guys. Like, yes, civilians are being harmed and we're all being played like fiddles, asking, being forced to take sides on social media. What flag do you represent? Meanwhile, behind the scenes, these deep states are running the show, doing all of the things and pulling all of our strings. So the term Pearl Harbor is being used all over again, Western media, to justify the Israeli invasion of Gaza. But perhaps we should stop and think about how both of those events came to pass. In both of those events, something shady happened. In both situations, we knew about these events ahead of time. We knew about Pearl Harbor ahead of time. Just 3 days before December 7, 1941, Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt was warned in a memo from the Naval Intelligence that Tokyo's military and spy network was focused on attacking Hawaii. Did nothing about it. And that's just the tip of the Pearl Harbor iceberg. We don't have time to get into all of that tonight. And don't get me started on the knowledge we had, of course, on the 9/11 attacks. We've done whole deep dive videos here on and interviews about the 9/11 attacks and how the hijackers themselves simply couldn't have taken those planes and smashed them into the World Trade Center towers, and the controlled demolition of those buildings on top of all of that. Building 7. Can we get into all of the details? No, we don't have time. So how the hell did Israel magically fail to stop this? Steve Bannon had an interesting take on this whole Pearl Harbor 9/11 conundrum. Listen.
The Israelis are calling this a combination of Pearl Harbor and 9/11. We still don't have the truth on Pearl Harbor or 9/11. Let me just be blunt about that. And I've gone through every document, every commission. I think they had six or seven on Pearl Harbor. IDF's intelligence operation, I think, is pound for pound the best in the world. Then you have Mossad. Then you have the CIA. We have 17, you know, you have NSA. It is impossible. Impossible. This thing, it was a military operation on land, sea, and air with 5,000 missiles, paragliders. It's over a geographic. They were all the way from Tel Aviv to Gaza. This took months. The Wall Street Journal said months. I think years of planning, logistics, recruitment, training, finance. And people don't talk about this. They had Palestinian journalist embeds. There were Palestinian journalist embeds. This is a full. This was like us going into Iraq in 2003. It is impossible for the intelligence apparatus between the United States and not just that, the Saudis and UAE, their intelligence apparatuses work with the Israelis and work with the United States. It couldn't have happened. It's impossible for it to happen.
Impossible.
Now, something I've been fixated on because I remember so clearly a 60 Minutes piece from 2006, I believe it was, and I've been searching for it online and haven't been able to find it, where
Israel, maybe they took it down, by the way.
They have, in fact. I've had a couple conversations with Google Bard. We've been searching for it. My best friend, who I like to argue with about war politics, Google Bard is Google's chat GPT competitor. Yeah. And it is not there anymore. So if anybody can like find it in a sleuth newsroom, I would love to see this. What they said to Scott Pelley over 15 years ago, I believe, yeah, way more than that, was that Israel can have their Air Force airborne within 90 seconds of a threat. They said this to 60 Minutes, and I can't find proof of it, but I remember it. It's up here, so help me find it, that within any threat, they can be airborne in 90 seconds. So why did the attack on October 7th take hours? Why wasn't anybody able to be in the air in 90 seconds?
Right.
Well, and I watched a lady that did an interview that said that even if a cat can literally trigger the alarms over the border. A cat.
Right.
So if they're getting triggered by cats, and we're to believe all these people just flew in on paragliders and
right.
Well, and I think military in the world.
And the fact that Palestinian journalists were embedded and there was no communication, there was nothing picked up at all. I mean, come on, we're not stupid, right? We're not stupid. We know. We know. And so You can see this all unfolding here. Of course, they don't want to stop this. They didn't want to stop. Why would they want to stop this? They needed a Pearl Harbor moment. The United States needs a Pearl Harbor moment. They need this. We need these events in order to destabilize and control the Middle East. General Wesley Clark explained a few years ago how he saw these documents, these specific documents that we're talking about here, that laid it all out in black and white on their plans for the Middle East. Classified documents. Listen.
Right after 9/11, about 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs," meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, "today." And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. I said, is it classified? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't.
This is not funny.
The audience thought it was funny.
I don't like the laugh track on that, Clayton.
It wasn't a laugh track. It was a live audience. But yeah, he says, you know, I don't show it to me. These are the countries that we're going to target. Does it sound familiar? What's actually happening? And all of the rhetoric, of course, about Iran over the past 48, 72 hours. So get ready. Something big is coming. Do you feel like we're being played like a fiddle? I do. Let us know in the comments below what you think. Lovely Lee here in the chat. I want to comment on here. Lovely. I don't know if that's a woman or a man.
Love Lie
says they have not run out of water and it's on again, which they do. Okay. So I didn't say their water was turned off. That maybe you misheard me, but I was specifically speaking about the shelters had run out of water. That's a report that came out shortly before. And by the way, that was already a big concern over the past 72 hours. So these are the reports at this hour. But
and we specifically spoke about the infrastructure of water inside Gaza, making questions. So we're questioning reporting just like you do.
Right.
So don't call me a liar.
From what I understood, they were only getting water from Israel 4 days a week, and they had big reservoirs on top of buildings that would actually hold the water for the days they weren't getting water.
Yeah.
So
most of the reporting in the West Bank, they have a water authority, and in Gaza, they have wells. They mostly have wells. And Israel has come to them in the past and said, we'd like to recycle your sewage water, because Israel is able to do that. They recycle sewage water and use it for farming. And Hamas didn't want to because they don't want to legitimize their relationship with the Israeli government. You can politicize that all you want, but this is what has happened. So they do have an aquifer. The aquifer is polluted with runoff from farming pesticides and sewage water. Israel has made an offer, not the government per se, but Israeli scientists, and Hamas didn't want to. So think whatever you want of that, but that is at least true. So there is an ability to tap into the wells, but how many of the wells have been destroyed, we don't know.
K.N. Kieran, thank you for your super chat, $10 super chat, says they killed Arafat, Yasser Arafat. I think the CIA with Mossad poisoned him. They couldn't find what poison did it based on autopsy. But yeah, Hamas was a tool that got out of control. Yeah, and it started out. I mean, it's amazing. If you go back in the history of Hamas, they literally had one weapon, one gun. And until we turned them into the beast that they are, it's remarkable. So we've got more news to get to here on your Monday, if you can believe it. We're going to look at these weapons. How in the world did these weapons from Ukraine wind up in Israel? Yeah, this is an unbelievable story. We will get into the details of that and how, you know, that sounded out like it was a conspiracy theory at first. No. We're going to dive deeply into that. We're also going to look at Syria tonight, a very important story that the Western media ignores. We will dive into that. Plus, what is Zelensky doing right now? Suddenly, his war is not the most popular war. How will he continue to get money and favor from
Vogue
the United
covers.
States? And Vogue covers, yeah, and GQ magazine covers and new T-shirts.
It's really hard to land the cover of Vogue.
Yeah.
They haven't asked me.
Are we going to see a Netanyahu Vogue cover?
We'll see.
Probably.
Soon?
That'll be next. Yeah, because Zelensky wants to come to Israel. Like, he was like, I'll come. I want to come. Can I come?
Well, just today, we're going to get to that in the last story. The Israel said, it's not a good time. Basically, can I get your number? Leave yours.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you? Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. All right.
But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Private VPN, because if you're not using a VPN, man, I don't know what. If you watch this show, you know that you are being tracked by your government. You are being tracked on the internet by marketers. You're being tracked by everything. For instance, when you have a private conversation away from your phone, and then you go and get an ad for the thing you spoke about offline. Yeah, that happens. That happens a lot. It happened to me just today. So if you're not using a VPN, well, then you can't guarantee that you're not being tracked or spoken about. So it's, you know, it's time you really think about being safer online. Do you know that over 30 million people have signed up for our sponsor over at Private VPN, Private Internet Access? You need to check them out. It's Private Internet Access VPN, and a VPN is not as intimidating as you think. They help you to download it. They help you walk you through how to do it. And if you get lost, they have customer service to help you. You know, would you ever hand your laptop or your phone over to a stranger and ask them to look at your private browsing history? Of course not. That's a privacy invasion. And yet that's what happens to you on the internet if you're not using a VPN. So you need Private Internet Access, the world's most transparent VPN provider. They work with all the major streaming services so that you can access more content than ever before in the world, watch things from all over the world. And it's really easy to use. There are apps available for all operating systems. So if you want to enjoy all the benefits of Private Internet Access, now is the time to subscribe. Head on over to piavpn.com/redacted and you get an 83% discount. Seriously, 83%. That's $2.03 a month for truly private browsing. Yes, please. You want that. You also get an extra 4 months completely free, but you must go to piavpn.com/redacted for a truly private digital life. One more time. That's piavpn.com/redacted. Are Western weapons being used on both sides of the war in Israel? It would seem that is the case. We were warned that weapons from the West being sent to Ukraine were being sold to bad actors in the Middle East and abroad, with organizations buying them on the black market. We know, obviously, that the United States is providing weapons to Israel. So does that mean U.S. taxpayer-funded weapons on both sides? Redacted correspondent Mike Jones has been interviewing military officials and digging into this story. He is in Russia, and he joins us today. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So we know that the U.S. is providing Israel with weapons directly. They are saying so quite publicly. But what about the evidence that the U.S. has been indirectly providing Hamas with weapons? What do you know about this?
I've done a lot of research, and recently I did an interview with Vasily Prozorov, who runs a Telegram channel, UKR Leaks, in many languages, including English. He informed me through his colleagues they had documentation that included the sale of weapons outside of Ukraine through corrupt military officials and through bribes, and primarily actually through the grain corridor. Using these barges that were intended for food. This was how, allegedly, they are getting or were getting the weapons out of Ukraine.
It's a very interesting moment, because I also have such information that weapons from Ukraine goes to Middle East to Islamic terrorists. It was confirmed by POWs from Ukraine. Besides, in Mariupol department of SBU, I got several secret documents in my hands, where it was said that the weapons from Ukraine, from the West, Western weapons, goes being sold to Middle East.
On top of Vasily's interview, just about this time last year, people will recall the interview with Aidan Aslin that John Mark Dugan conducted, where Aidan very candidly discussed how his battalion commanders called him in to get his contacts for his Syrian or the, I think it was the Kurds and the rebels there. So while he was in Syria, he obviously got to know some of the fighters, and the Ukrainian commanders, as Aslin alleges, were keen to find out who these people were in order to sell weapons to them.
Right. So we're going to play just a little bit of that clip right now. Watch this. I'm sorry, say who it is again one more time.
Aidan Aslin.
Okay, so watch how he says quite candidly that this was my job, is to make these connections for sale of black weapon markets, black market weapons.
Later, I was like asking my friend, like, what do they want to speak to you about? And they were basically saying that they want to, like, basically sell his weapons, like, for a price. You know, I've read this in the news, like, stuff went missing, and this is the only way I can, like, think of is that the stuff that he's like wanting to sell is the stuff that's going missing. I don't like to say like I helped it, but like it might be possible that it was me that they had it. Yeah. And I was like speaking to him. I was like, how was things in Syria? And it's like, it's good. With like your friend is like being able to help us like with like certain aspects that the Americans wouldn't give us. I was like, I'm glad I could help with that because. And, yeah.
Was he specific at all about what aspects?
He said like apparently they're going to be sending some new like rockets that are on the way.
So your research would indicate that this is more on the up and up than it would seem, whereas just over the weekend, President Putin said that he doesn't blame the Zelensky government. He says they probably don't want this, but they can't stop it. Here's a clip of that.
Market for weapons works in such a way that there are people who want to buy weapons and they will find it. And yes, of course, we have information on the sales of weapons to countries, including countries of the Middle East. Well, I have no sympathies for today's leadership of Ukraine, but I have doubt that it's done willingly by them.
So what do you make of this, that even Putin is not blaming the Zelensky government? He's presenting this as if it's just an inevitability that can't be stopped.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And let's not forget that he, among many other Russian officials, did quite voluminously warn about this, about the level of the corruption, as they predicted would mean there would be these leak of weapons onto the black market, which, as Sergei Lavrov warned, would feed into hotspots around the world. So this case now that we've seen in Palestine and Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu actually let slip with the Jerusalem Post as to why Israel wasn't sending weapons to Ukraine, because he said a concern of Israel was that the weapons would then find their way into the hands of Iran. And he claimed that Israeli military had discovered weapons intended for Ukraine on the border of Israel in the summer of last year, earlier this year. So he actually let slip that this was happening. And what's also of concern is that places like Eritrea, Libya, Sudan, places in Africa, there are even reports that these rebels against the French have been using these weapons, as was clearly warned about. So whilst this has been an unmitigated PR disaster for certainly the Zelensky regime, where he's then come out and claimed that Russia captured these weapons and then handed them over to these hotspots. So
that is almost comical. Right.
Absolutely. And yet you need only Google Hamas weapons Ukraine, and you'll have the Moscow Times, the Kiev Independent, among Business Insider as well, all repeating this claim that actually it's Russia who supplied U.S. weapons intended for Ukraine.
Right. And I think it's worth remembering that these warnings that have been going on about these weapons getting in the hands of unintended people have been sort of scoffed off by the Western press as Russian disinformation or anti-war rhetoric. And now it does seem to be true. Now, in response to what you had just said, Zelensky claiming that it was Russia capturing Western weapons and then funneling them into Middle Eastern places, Putin has said Russia wouldn't do that because they have a good relationship with Israel. Can you speak to that?
Yes, that's absolutely true. And that's why we've seen Russia and indeed China come forward with meaningful sort of peace proposals. This has certainly been an opportunity for BRICS to actually demonstrate their professionalism in diplomacy, as opposed to Annalena Baerbock and Blinken and so forth. Russia has traditionally had very good relations both with Palestine and Israel, which is why you haven't seen certainly the leadership come out on, you know, condemning either side. They understand the problem, the scale of it, and also the mechanisms that are likely needed to solve it. And once more, as Putin has pointed out, this is the US policy failure in this region, trying to monopolize the situation there. And when you have UN resolutions that were passed but never enacted, we've seen the same as we did with the Minsk agreements, where there was people who wanted to be an independent state and all these agreements not being reinforced.
Now, Russia today has proposed a United Nations resolution on this war so that at least we can get on record some votes. Why do you think they continue to do this, even though anything that's voted upon by the United Nations just, I don't know, the West does whatever they want anyway?
Well, yeah, we see this quite a lot. Vasily Nebenzia highlighting even this case with these weapons coming out of Ukraine in there. I believe it's because, as we saw in the years running up to this conflict in Donbass, where Russia dotted the I's and crossed the T's, they went through all the formal channels, got all the records, so that then you have that process that's well documented and much more difficult, which leaves it harder for the Western press to spin, which is why we see these formal processes and resolutions taking place, even though the parties that are responsible for enacting and enforcing them likely won't, because it won't match their agendas.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to leave you with this last question, because I'm curious about your take on this, even though it has little to do with weaponry through Ukraine. But do you think that this war in Israel will now eclipse the war in Ukraine and make it so that Western powers have less interest? And then maybe that will lead to possibly peace resolutions, because it's just no longer in vogue, for lack of a better word?
Yes, we're seeing some sort of former members of the Ukrainian Rada warning now that support from the West will end in November, specifically the US. This is what they're warning the citizens of Ukraine to brace themselves. This has certainly provided quite a convenient off-ramp, and also has taken media attention away from very difficult topics, most notably, obviously, the failure of the counteroffensive, the waste of money, the corruption, as we're seeing the fruits, if you will, now coming through, which looks very poorly. And if we think of Biden's upcoming election campaign, it's very convenient to have that light shone elsewhere. So hopefully it will result in a peace in certainly the Donbass region. But it's just tragic that it comes at the cost of more lives in another region.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Okay, well, thank you for your analysis, as always. Fantastic. You can follow Mike Jones on his Telegram channel, which is I Earl Gray, and other places. So thank you again, as always, for reporting for Redacted.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mike. I love the idea that, yes, Russia is going to take the weapons they captured, Western weapons, if you follow the logic on this, right? This is the PR, the propaganda that's being spun, that Russia would right. take the captured weapons, Western weapons that they capture on the battlefield, get them packed up, you know, bubble wrap, you know, and like those plastic little peanuts, you know?
Right, like, with a little note, like love mom.
Love
in
Putin.
There.
Right. Here you go.
Russian Prime delivery.
Right. We're going to put in some vodka. Here you go, Hamas. Here are some things we captured on the battlefield in Zelensky's counteroffensive.
As
here
if
you go.
They're not involved in their own war, right? Like, the wiser thing to do would use them.
Yeah.
Save them, if that were the case.
And
right?
they, by the way, we have, and we've covered here on the show, Russian soldiers using captured American tanks, Western tanks, using them on the battlefield, turning them right around and reusing them. They're not going to like send them off to Hamas.
And if Russia actually wanted to funnel weapons to Hamas, you know, we've reported, in fact, Western media is reporting that they have a surplus of weapons. They don't need to take American weapons. They could send their own if they wanted.
Yeah.
And think about that. How would they even do that in the first place? They'd have to call like some logistical company. Hey, DHL, do you guys ship tanks? Like, what's the cost on that? Right. Like, Russia's not going to be able to deliver them personally. They can't even, like, if they went into those waters.
Can we send you our man pads? Like, we got these giant man pads. Could we pay a bulk freight for that? We got to send that. And by the way, this idea of like an intelligence failure on the part of the Israelis, the total, you know, idea that they didn't know anything at all about this, but they would somehow also not know that Russia is sending all sorts of weapons into Israel or into Palestine?
Right. In fact, the article that Mike Jones just showed us was Netanyahu in June of this year saying, we don't want to send weapons to Ukraine because we have concerns that the weapons that the West has sent is making it into extremists on our shores. So Netanyahu knew this and admitted as such in June, and that's why Israel has declined to participate.
Yeah. A clown show, clown show. Thank you guys for the super chats in the meantime. We really appreciate it. We got a couple of really nice super chats. Appreciate that. Thank you for saying hello. Joseph Michael says, bless you all and keep it up. Thank you guys so much. Really appreciate that. Saranson, $5 super chat says, all wars are banker wars. I pray for the children. Yeah, did you see today, by the way, Vanguard, you know, we always talk about BlackRock, but Vanguard equally is scary. They've uncovered that they've been secretly investing in all sorts of Chinese companies. So the idea that these bankers, these big groups don't have their hands in all of this, is quite laughable. Anyway, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to look at the attacks in Syria. This is a country that the Western media ignores, but why is Israel also attacking Syria right now? The United States, of course, has troops there. Is this the next front in this regional war? We're going to talk about that. And also, we're going to look at Zelensky, who is afraid that you will forget about him. He's trying to go on a popularity tour, trying to raise
awareness. He's calling it a solidarity tour. Yeah.
He needs to reach out to Simple Minds and see if he can play that. Don't you forget about me.
Right.
Maybe he should join up with like Taylor Swift and go on tour.
The Eras Tour. Yeah.
That same thing, because she made billions on her tours. I mean, he could just make billions. He wouldn't need us.
Get Zelensky.
Right.
There you go.
I wonder.
All right, we got all of that. But first, are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like to get up to 16 free stocks right now? Look, now is a really important time to take care of your family financially right now. I mean, what is happening right now in these markets? It could be turbulence incoming, bracing for impact. Because this week we saw the VIX reaching 15%. VIX was up 15%, the volatility index. Gold was up 3%, which that never happens. Gold usually goes up like a half a percentage point. And on top of that, crude oil prices up 5%. The last time that happened was during the 2008 financial collapse. So you know what's coming, guys. It's really important right now to get educated and trade like a pro. If you want to buy stocks in things like, you know, different minerals companies or commodities that are vital right now, you need to check out our friends over at Moomoo. And these guys do an amazing job with their app. Their app is really fantastic on Windows, Mac, PC, Android, iPhone. It looks fantastic. But even if you are just wanting to use this opportunity right now to learn, their education tools are fantastic. So you're saying to yourself, oh crap, what's going to happen in this broader market right now? Well, maybe now would be a good time to learn, and it's free. So you download the app, you make your initial deposits, you get 16 free stocks, you get a free share of Tesla or a free share of Google stock. And you get to use all of these amazing tools. It's, you know, it's a no-brainer just to at least get the account set up and get these free stocks. And then we'll watch this crazy volatility in this market, which seems to be incoming, seems to be imminent. So here's how you get your 16 free stocks. Go to redacted.inc/moomoo. That's redacted.inc/moomoo. Well, all eyes on Israel and all of the Western media focused on what happens next in the Gaza Strip. But of course, another country that has been under attack over the past 10 days is Syria, by the Israelis attacking the airports in Aleppo and Damascus. But Western media is, of course, silent on that story, but we are not. And we are bringing in Kavor Kalmasian, Syrian journalist, who writes and does great videos at Syriana Analysis for what is exactly happening in Syria, perhaps the lost country in this entire conflict right now. Kavor, good to see you. What can you tell us over the past few hours has been happening in Syria with these continued attacks on the Syrian civilian infrastructure?
Thank you very much, Clayton, for having me again on your channel. And also thank you for shedding light on the different geopolitical conflicts in the region, which is very important for your audience as well. I believe the situation, the security situation, is deteriorating in the region after the decision of Israel to wage a ground offensive against the Gaza Strip. The declared goal, according to official Israeli officials, is to occupy the Gaza Strip and push the 2 million Palestinians to the Sinai region so that they would become refugees indefinitely, just like the half a million Palestinian refugees in Syria, half a million Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, and 2 million Palestinian refugees in Jordan, and the rest are spread all around the world. Those people never had the chance to go back to their countries after they were dispelled. So the Syrian side is definitely involved in this conflict with Israel, and they are trying to, what is called in the military strategy in Syria, is to increase the pace of the retaliation depending on what the Israelis are planning in the Gaza Strip. When Antony Blinken visited the region, and he visited to Israel, also to Jordan, to Saudi Arabia, this has also preceded with a phone call for the first time between the president of Iran and with his counterpart, King of Saudi Arabia. And it seems that there is a consensus, even among the people, even among the countries who want to normalize relations with Israel, that the occupation of the Gaza Strip and expelling 2 million Palestinians to the Sinai region is a red line. And accordingly, it seems that Syria wants to join the coalition of countries, especially Iran, Hezbollah, which is a very strong actor here, and the rest of the militant groups in the Gaza Strip, that if the Israelis want to wage this ground offensive, they will also retaliate. And this also explains Biden's warning against to Israel that they shouldn't occupy the Gaza Strip, because the messages and the signals they have received from the region is that the regional countries and even the countries who are allies with the United States and want to normalize relations with Israel are against this ground operation of Israel in the Gaza Strip. Therefore, yesterday we have seen this report from the Israeli side that say they want to halt or postpone the operation for 1 week because of the bad weather. The truth of the matter is that they received the information or the intelligence information from the region that there is a preparation for escalation against Israel from multi-fronts. And let's remember that the Hezbollah side, they are not like Hamas. Hezbollah has over 100,000 soldiers, and they have gained lots of experience in Syria when they fought against ISIS and Nusra. Those are very vicious groups, right? And they have anti-tank missiles, they have air defense systems, and they even have anti-ship cruise missiles. Hezbollah is a regular army, and if they intervene in this war, they will neutralize the air bases of Israel. And that's why the Americans have sent two aircraft carriers to the Mediterranean, because Hezbollah and Syria, they are capable of neutralizing the air bases if Israel invades the Gaza Strip. So Israel also, at the same time, is sending signals to Syria that if you intervene, I'm going also to bomb Syria. And what happened is, in the past 10 days, they have bombed twice the Aleppo International Airport, which is used for civilian purposes, and also the Damascus International Airport, which is also used for civilian purposes. And the timing was very interesting, because Israel bombed the airport just 1 day before the landing of the foreign minister of Iran to Syria. And therefore, the foreign minister of Iran had to go to Beirut, and from Beirut come with a car to Damascus. Because wow. Iran is now coordinating with the regional governments how could they respond to the Israeli potential attack on the Gaza Strip. Now they postponed it. Let's see if they are going to follow the schedule. But if, I would say, Israel invades Gaza and they want to kick out the Palestinians to Egypt, this is definitely going to escalate, and definitely Hezbollah at least is going to intervene. And if Hezbollah intervenes, the United States will intervene. And if United States intervene, then we are talking about regional war. Iran will also intervene. Syria will also intervene. So who benefits from this? We have to ask this question.
Right. Follow the money, right? Who benefits from this? The United States using, of course, Israel as an aircraft carrier, as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just said. This is one of the reasons why we support Israel, is because, in his words, Israel is basically an aircraft carrier for the United States in this region, of course. I want to bring up, when you talked about the refugee question, and that was brought up over the past 48 hours by the ex-foreign minister for Israel. When asked what should happen to the Palestinians, he said they should be pushed out of Gaza, they should be funneled through into Egypt, through the Rafah border crossing, and set up a massive tent city in the desert. Get out of Gaza. And he held up Syria as an example of the success of a tent city for refugees. And he said, just like Syria and the Syrian refugees, this is what should happen to the Palestinians. Again, this is the ex-foreign minister of Israel. So can you talk about the great success of the Syrian refugees living in tents, sleeping on floors and praying and hoping to actually get a sliver of a mattress to sleep on and so they don't freeze to death? I mean, it sounds like a great success.
Clayton, as much as tried, as I personally try to be objective and not to use these words, but it's very psychopathic of him to give the example of the Syrian refugees as if it's a successful story. There are millions, 5 million Syrian refugees. Most of them are living in tents under dire conditions during the winter times. Every year, there are babies dying, there are mothers dying because there is no heating and there is no basic necessities for these people. The idea of encouraging the people to become a refugee at the first place was for political reasons. They wanted to weaponize the refugees against the Assad regime, so that they say the people are fleeing from the Assad regime and the Assad regime lost its legitimacy. This was the purpose of it. But they thought that this issue will be resolved very quickly in a few months and these people can go back. But it has become 12 years of war right now. So these people have become permanently refugees. And now, since the powers who weaponized the refugees against Syria lost their interest with the refugees, now they're not even funding these refugees anymore. And these refugees, even if they want to go back to Syria, they are these NGOs that are all, of course, funded by the usual suspects in the NED, USAID, George Soros organizations. They are scaremongering the people and telling them that if you go to Syria, the Assad regime will murder you, so you should stay a refugee. They have created a new identity called the refugee. Like, I'm a refugee, I'm proud. There is even an Olympic team for the refugees right now. So they're creating an identity of people to become a refugee. Yes, of course, there are two. There is a Syrian woman, she's a swimmer. She participated in the Olympics in the refugee team and not in her Syrian national team. This is becoming a trend in the region, right? So when Ayalon says he wants to copy the example of Syrian refugees, which means these people also will become refugees indefinitely. And remember, the refugees after the Nakba, after 1948, expulsion of the Palestinians from their homelands, they have remained refugees up until this moment. And this is going to be the case in Egypt. And the geography of Egypt is very difficult. It's a deserty environment. It's very warm and it lacks water. So they're going to send all these 2 million people there in a very dire situation and build them there, these so-called cities, and keep them there. So this is the solution of Israel. It's ethnic cleansing of the people from the Gaza Strip. Regardless of what is your opinion about Hamas, I've been personally attacking Hamas for 10 years now. But the people there, the civilians, these 2 million civilians have nothing to do with Hamas. And these people, they deserve to live in their towns, in their farms, and in their birthplace, right? And not to be expelled to somewhere else and then bring settlers from all around the world and settle them in these areas. And there is something very important here, Clayton. Israel uses this excuse all the time to expand. They say security concerns. They occupy the Golan Heights, right? And they say, I have to create a buffer zone with Syria, so they occupy the Golan Heights. They have to create a buffer zone with the Gaza Strip, so they create, they occupy the surroundings of Gaza, and they put military installations there. If the Palestinians been expelled to Sinai, and in a generation, if these kids who are growing up on the stories of the horror that they live now, and in 10 years, 20 years, and they say, I want to go back to my home, I want to go back to Gaza. And if they shoot one bullet on Israel from the Sinai, this time on Israel, Israel would say, now I have to expand in the Sinai because there is a danger, security danger coming from there. And remember, in 1967, Israel occupied the Sinai completely. So if they occupied it once, they would occupy it for the second time. But this time, through this slow, gradual occupation of the territories, quoting security concerns and expanding in the region. So in my opinion, Israel is the only country in the Middle East which is expanding since 1948, and nobody is even saying anything about it. Israel doesn't adhere to the international law, which has drawn where is the border of Israel, right? they don't follow that international law, and they just expand even on Palestinian territories in West Bank by building the settlements. And as Chomsky once said, it has become like a chicken nuggets, like small nuggets everywhere. And between each of these nuggets, there are checkpoints of the Israeli occupation army. And all these settlements are heavily protected by armed militias from the settlers and also from the IDF.
Yeah, and of course, Egypt now moving to join BRICS. Once they have that BRICS control of the Suez Canal, that would not be something that the United States would want. And so pushing into Sinai to give back control to Western authorities of that major waterway passage would be ideal for Western powers and these globalists as well. Kevork, I know you've got to run and to do some work there. Thank you for your continued amazing journalism on this. We really appreciate it. Thank you for keeping us abreast of what's happening in Syria, lest we forget what has actually been happening while the people there have been bombed over the past few days as well, and the Western press focusing on exclusively on what's happening in Israel. Thank you so much, Kevork. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Clayton.
Thank you so much, Kevork. We really appreciate it. I just saw someone in the chat just now when he was answering just said, man is speaking facts. Yes. And then I saw someone else said, why you all lie? So I love that. I love
that is someone a man says, I would love to break bread with one day.
Yes, yes.
Seems like he would be such a great individual.
No, yeah. Really smart guy. Really smart. So thank you, Kevork. We really appreciate it. We've got a lot more news to get to you here on your Monday. We're going to look at why Zelensky is basically saying please don't forget about me on almost the same day when Vladimir Putin has come out and announced that the Ukraine's counteroffensive has been a total failure and more than 90,000 lives, at least roughly that is the number, 90,000 Ukrainians dead, soldiers, as a result of this failed counteroffensive. So guess it really worked for NATO. Got exactly what they wanted. We'll talk about that story in a moment. But first, right now, we saw gold over the past few days skyrocketing, up 3%. That never happens, guys, never. The last time that happened, and it happened at the same time that the VIX was up 15% and crude oil prices up 5%, is because of a major shift in geopolitics around the world. The last time this happened, of course, was 2008 when Lehman Brothers collapsed. And then we saw this surge in gold prices. So something is happening right now with these sovereign wealth managers who are looking at these trillions of dollars that they manage around the world and noticing what's happening with the broader economy. Iran, talking about possible preemptive strikes. If Israel moves into the Gaza Strip, what is going to happen? The United States moving double carrier groups right now into this region. We could be facing a regional war. That's why these sovereign wealth managers bought all this gold over the past few days. So these governments are stocking up on gold because who the hell knows what's going to happen with currencies. So if your family, if you've got savings that you're, you know, putting aside for your family, for school or college or just paying bills right now, and you're worried about the euro or the U.S. dollar, please, protect yourselves. And one of the ways that we do that is with precious metals. We do that with silver. We do that with gold. These things have sustained themselves for 5,000 years. They're not going anywhere. And that's why you see in times of turmoil like we're seeing right now, people are stocking up on this. So even if you took like $100 in cash and just converted it, put it in precious metals to protect your family. This is a very smart move right now, even just a portion of your savings. I'm not a financial advisor. I can't tell you what to do. But Natalie and I have certainly done that. Bought a lot of silver recently because of the prices are so cheap on silver particularly. So anyway, our friends at Lear Capital can help you, and you can just jump on the phone with them. You can tell them your situation. You can say, hey, I've got this amount in savings, or I've got an old IRA that's sitting there not doing anything. How can I convert it over to a gold-backed IRA that I can use to buy precious metals? Right now, they're giving away $15,000 in bonus metals for qualifying purchases. So just call them. Just get on the phone with them and set up a time to chat with them, and they can kind of walk you through that process. Their 1-800 number is 1-800-613-3557. And they have a website, too. Just go to LearRedacted.com. Now, a lot of people asked in the chat, hey, does Lear work overseas? What if I'm here in the UK? Can I work with them? Just get on the phone with them and talk. It depends on your situation, but I think, mostly US based, especially if you're buying metals and they're going to be shipping you actual gold coins and things like that. So be in the US for that. Anyway, 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Patreon.com. So thanks for their support of the show. We really appreciate it.
All right. Well, Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky is wondering why his phone is not ringing like it once did. It must be incredibly upsetting for a narcissist when they were the leader of one of the world's most popular wars, and now they can no longer get on the cover of Vogue or to the Oscars. What is going on, you guys?
Wait, is he gonna get the
I'm
Golden
the popular
Globe?
Guy
yeah.
in the green shirt.
Remember
what the
me?
Heck?
It's,
yeah.
It's Halloween time. Everyone's going to be wearing their Zelensky. I wonder if actually for Halloween, you know, a lot of people planned on wearing like Zelensky outfits for Halloween. Are they not going to be doing that this Halloween?
I
He's
don't
not
think,
the most
I think
popular.
That was last year's oh, Halloween okay. costume.
Out of favor.
He's become
right.
Joe Biden at those parties. Remember when Barack Obama was there and oh, Biden was just walking yeah. around aimlessly like.
Oh, that was so embarrassing. Right. Like, who's
I
that?
I remember that.
He's the president and he can't get anyone to talk with him. He's just like wandering around the room. It was so sad.
Well, what we're going to talk about is how far the Zelensky's star has fallen in just a week of not being the world's most popular war. Now, it's awful, right, that we need these sort of like wars du jour and the media attention is just so fleeting, like a Kardashian, but that's what we're going to talk about. Zelensky's trying to get into Israel for a solidarity tour, and just today Israel said, not a good time. Don't call us, we'll call you. What he wanted to do was get in there, do a little tour in his green shirt, and maybe show Benjamin Netanyahu how to be a media darling, the way that he has enjoyed this status for almost 2 years now. But that media darling status may be very fleeting. Fame is, as fame does, I suppose. What's that from? Fame is a fickle thing, Harry. It's from...
Harry Potter.
Lockhart, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Harry Potter. Yeah.
Okay, he could take a lesson from Gilderoy Lockhart. That now, you know, the counteroffensive has come and gone, and that can no longer rest on the star, the fame of Zelensky. Can maybe the Zelensky's hope for more Vogue covers like this that will help bring him back to the center of attention? Now, in response to him not being able to get the Western media's attention anymore, he's taken to desperate moves such as offering to visit Israel, offering to bomb Iran, offering to blame Russia for a conflict that does not have anything to do with Russia. What, as I was researching this, this reminds me of, and I had to bring a Friends clip because just this is on my mind, is the episode of Friends where they switch apartments and Monica can't stand it that no one's coming to hang out at her house because she's used to being the hostess. So what she does in a desperate move is bakes cookies and blows a fan on them. This is, to my mind, what Zelensky's doing. Watch.
I don't know, but it smells good.
Fresh cookies, hot from the oven. Ooh. Please have some.
Okay, so the fan cookie combination may
over.
Just be what Zelensky needs to do. Uh-huh. Clayton actually laughed at a Friends clip. He hates Friends.
Yeah,
but that's funny,
yeah,
right?
It's no Seinfeld, but it's, that was good.
Okay, well that
can
may
we,
be.
Can we back up just? Sorry.
Yeah.
Can we back up just 1 second? Because you said he offered to bomb Iran.
He
yeah,
did.
Like, yeah, a few weeks ago. He and Syria. He's like, hey, I'll bomb Iran and Syria. Using the weapons, you know, the U.S. has already provided these weapons. I'll do that. I will bomb Iran and Syria. Can I do that? Can I do that?
That is like the wafting of the cookies. We're going to get to that. I'm going to remind you of that story in just a second. But yes, that is just one of many ways that he's trying to get the phone to ring again. Just last week, he had an address to European Parliament canceled. Take a look at this. They did not say why. They just said, can't hear from you right now. And he had to sort of rearrange his schedule in the week. Instead, he went to Romania, where he was called out by a senator for not protecting Romanians in Ukraine. Recall that Zelensky has put into place laws that forbid speaking Russian and other languages. Romanian is one of them. Senator Diana Sosuaca called to Zelensky to speak with her about this when he visited and posted this on her social media.
The president, do you like to talk to a senator of Romania about Romanian minorities of Ukraine? Look, this is a map, real map of Romania. Please respect our Romanians in Ukraine. Please let them speak in Romanian. Respect us. Thank you.
Okay, so that wasn't awesome for his optics. And while he was in Europe, he gave this interview to France too. He said this: there is a risk that international attention will turn away from Ukraine, and that will have consequences. Consequences for him, or consequences for the rest of us for turning against Ukraine, he didn't really say. But we can see that he is worried about the lack of attention. Then he offered to tour Israel in solidarity. Now, it's interesting how Axios here says that, look at this line, a visit by Zelensky would boost international support for Israel's counteroffensive against Hamas. Now, okay, that's not my interpretation, that Israel needs the Zelensky public relations boost due to, you know, the star popularity of Zelensky. Do you think that?
No, I mean, Americans, 68% of Americans support Israel in this war. 68%.
Yeah, that's high.
They're not hurting. Think about President Biden's approval rating.
Right.
Certain cancers, certain viruses have a higher approval rating than President Biden does right now. So more Americans support war, Israel, than they do President Biden. They don't need Zelensky to help.
And the last poll I saw about support for Ukraine was in the 50s. So Israel is already leaps and bounds, public relations speaking, ahead of Ukraine. They absolutely don't need a boost from Zelensky. And so what he tried to do next was blame Russia for the attack on Israel, trying to sort of turn the camera back to his war and say, we're the first ones fighting Russia. Would you like to blame Russia too? Because then that puts me back at center stage. They said that they believed that it was Russia who helped Hamas and is behind Hamas, to which the Israeli ambassador to Moscow, Alexander Ben-Zvi, rejected that as complete nonsense. And he said that his government does not in any way believe that Russia was involved. Even Israel didn't buy that. So Zelensky desperately needs this media attention because, so far, the counteroffensive is basically dead. Russia says that it considers Ukraine's counteroffensive over. This is the same counteroffensive that cost over 90,000 lives. Pretty much no one ever thought it would succeed to regain territory. So what were those deaths for, I ask you? What did Ukraine get for those 90,000 lives? Now, the counteroffensive, we started tracking in early June, maybe late May. Here's the map on the left that we showed you of what the war looked like, that Ukraine wanted to have a counteroffensive to turn those red areas that voted to join Russia back into the white Ukraine. Here it's as it stands today. This map on the right looks exactly the same. No territory has been gained virtually, and 90,000 lives thrown at that. So Russian ambassador for the United Nations, Vasily Nebenzia, said this to the Security Council on Friday. For several days now, Russian troops have switched to combat operations practically along the entire front line. Therefore, we can consider the so-called Ukrainian counteroffensive formally over. Close the books, put a stamp on it. It's done. We don't need to send more weapons from the West. Nebenzia says that they are not opposed to armed forces of Ukraine. So if Ukraine wants to keep military presence in that region, go ahead. They don't want to fight them. They're not going to leave. But Ukrainian military can be there. What they are opposed to is NATO, they say, and the criminal neo-Nazi regime of Zelensky, which may mean that Zelensky's days are numbered if he cannot regain his A-list celebrity status. This could very much be, as we talked with Mike Jones earlier today, the off-ramp that the West needs. Throw Zelensky under the bus and end the war in Ukraine so that they can ramp up another one in Israel. Or Zelensky can offer to combine the two, get involved. Now, this is the nightmare scenario, is that Zelensky does succeed, which there's no indication that he would, but could he succeed at entangling Ukraine into the Middle East? This is what he offered to do. Remember, we showed you this just back in September, that he offered to attack Iran and Syria in exchange for long-range weapons. What The Guardian reported was that Ukraine was saying that they could attack other countries that the West doesn't like, such as Iran and Syria, because they have intelligence about the missiles that are used in those countries, and that they alone can do things that other countries cannot do because of the weaponry that they know about because of their what they called superior intelligence.
So he's saying if we attack them, then you can send us long-range missiles, but wouldn't they need those long-range missiles first before they could attack them? Like, well, what are they going to...
What they're saying that they have superior intelligence about the components inside of those weapons. They didn't bother to use that superior intelligence against Russia, I suppose. It was selective. They're saying they can use it against these Middle Eastern countries. If the West would like, they are willing to be sort of the thug, mob of the West.
How many countries do they want attacking them? I mean, I guess from a proxy standpoint, it makes sense because everybody's already freaking dead. But seriously, what they're going to start, like they can't handle the shit that they've already got and they're trying to start more. That just blows my mind
question is the next phase of this, right? Which is to what you were just postulating there, this idea that, well, what happens next? Are we going to have a standing army of the Ukraine standing army and they're just going to stop hitting the Donbass? They're going to stop hitting Luhansk, going to stop hitting Donetsk. They're going to just go back and stop doing what they've been doing since the 2014 Maidan coup and have been attacking in a genocide the eastern part of what was formerly eastern Ukraine. And now that Russia controls it fully and has established a government, saying we're done. Like, we're done. You've lost. Now what? Like, is it going to be one of those? It's like the guy holding his hand on a person's head and the person's like swinging underneath his, you know, and you're like holding them back and he's like, no, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. And you're like, are you really? Just stop now. Yeah. Please just stop now because it's now just beyond embarrassing.
I have a hypothesis. And I think what it is Zelensky had the Epstein list and the CIA sent Sean Penn in to befriend him and get that list back. And he succeeded. And now he has no more leverage. So,
okay.
And he didn't have any photocopies.
That's my hypothesis.
Yeah. He didn't have any photocopies either. He's like, here's the original. Here's the original. Yeah. You don't have any copies of this? Any digital copies? No, I have nothing else. Thank you, Sean Penn.
Right.
Here's your Oscar.
Well, thankfully, The Guardian reported that the United States did not show any indication in taking Ukraine up on that offer to attack other people we don't like. That's sort of a mobster move. Like anyone you want me to hurt for you to get in your good graces, then I get those weapons. That does not seem to be something that the West is wanting to ordain. They seem to be able to multitask their wars,
right?
The West, at least. So what now for Zelensky? If he can't hitch his wagon to the war in Israel, will he be forced to consider peace, which he has actually instated a law to forbid peace talks with Russia in Ukraine, but he can write a new law that says now that's okay. Will he be thrown under the bus as the West tries to get rid of him? Or will he start to look annoying to the media that loved him so much now that his war is so last season, like shoes or coats? Or maybe he could just take a page out of my favorite Twitter feed, Justin Trudeau's ego. This is parody, you guys, but Justin Trudeau did, in fact, take the weekend up. Update, I'm taking my fourth personal day in a row. My popularity is plummeting, so the best thing for me to do right now is lay low. Hopefully Canadians will be so distracted with issues in the Middle East, they'll forget about the damage I've done to Canada. Again, this is parody, you guys. But good suggestion. Yeah. This is the best. Justin Trudeau's ego.
I'm sure he'll find a way to screw that up. I'm sure he would find a way to even screw up like vacation days.
Yeah, I did actually look at his schedule over the last couple of days. He is today. His schedule is like briefing so and so about, you know, the war in Israel. But he did take the weekend off his personal days. Those are kind of funny, silly questions. What will Zelensky do without this popularity and this vogue? But a serious question here, though, is then can Ukrainians stop dying for this now, please? Can they stop dying? Like, if Zelensky is no longer this popular person who can draw in Western support, can we at least admit that the dying can stop now? Let us know what you think of this in the chat. And if you liked my friend's joke.
It was pretty good. Yes, indeed. And just a couple of like little news update nuggets here that we've been looking at over the past. Of course, we're watching what's happening with this Israeli invasion, what's happening with Iran, the phone call from Putin to Netanyahu just a short time ago before Putin left to go to China for the Belt and Road Initiative. By the way, think about that. You got the big Belt and Road Initiative from China, the big conference, whatever. I don't know what you call it, but this is like the third basic big announcement of this, a huge infrastructure project at a time when the United States is saying, hey, we can fund two wars simultaneously. So Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, coming out on top of the Biden interview last night on 60 Minutes, Biden said it's our obligation to go to war. It's our obligation to be at war with Israel or in helping Israel in the Middle East and in Ukraine. And then Janet Yellen saying the same thing.
Oh, yes. She said, even though we're hitting a debt ceiling, she says we can afford it.
We can afford it. We can afford to fight two wars, one against Russia and then one in the Middle East. And then, oh, what about China? Because that's your next war that you're planning on top of that.
And then when all of these are done, when we finally are finished with all these wars, we'll focus on the border because we can afford that then. We can't afford it both. We have to do one or the other, but...
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Let us know your thoughts on all of these stories and more. Hey, we do have some new merch. Did we get the new video up and running for the merch? I don't know what I asked.
I don't have a new video. No, sorry.
Okay. I know we were working on that, but okay. So, but anyway, we do have our store. If you'd like to support independent journalism, you can come over to our store. It's redactedstore.com. That's one place to go. We also have a community. And you can support our community as well. If you go to redacted.inc, on the right side of your screen there, you can become a VIP member and you can support our show. Again, we're not supported by billionaires. We usually have about 3 sponsor spots per show. Again, they keep the lights on here and we're supported by you. That's it. We do not have billionaires. We don't have George Soros. We don't have Jeff Bezos or anything like that funding what we do here. It's all you. So thank you guys. If you want to become a part of the rebellion and join us as a Rebel VIP, you can join our Plus Club where you get access to early content, videos and exclusives that other people don't get to see, plus early access to interviews before anyone else gets to see them, our redacted conversation videos. We have our new book club that's launching now that we're back from stomach virus Lollapalooza. Just go to redacted.inc and click on the right side of your screen there and become a redacted rebel. If you're on Rumble already, you can just click the join button and sign up right there. Again, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support what we do here. So thank you guys so much. Someone in the chat was saying, hey, next time you guys go on a break like that, can you really please give us a heads up? Mr. X, I think, was asking that. And someone said, well, they got like a wild case of like stomach flu.
Yeah, we only intended to take 2 days off. And then our kids shared with us a stomach flu that went through the whole house. It was a powerful one.
It was bad. It was really bad.
It laid out Clayton.
We did post.
Yeah, we did tell him.
Yeah,
we posted on social, but a lot of people don't see it. So if you guys want to get updated, if you go follow at the Redacted News on X, Twitter, that's where we post more updates, because like you can only post one on YouTube, you know, otherwise it clogs up the feed, but we can post it multiple times on Twitter. So follow us over there at the Redacted News.
At the Redacted News. That's the Twitter handle, right? How do you, whatever you call it?
Yeah.
The Redacted News is the X handle, the X name, I guess.
But thanks for coming back today and checking that we're here. And, I just want to say that watching the news when you're not well and feeling like, oh, my God, the world is turning to shit. What's happening? It feels really good to be here with this audience that I know will not make gross reductions of reality in order to sort of wait and think. And I'm just really grateful to be back with you guys because not being able to talk with this audience felt really powerless.
No, you guys are amazing. And I think we have the best audience on the internet for a live news show. Suck it, CNN. You guys don't have this. We have the best audience. You guys are amazing. And I love, that you guys will say like, we're trying to be empathetic and thoughtful and not just rush to judgment on things, really diving into the historical context and understanding the history here is so important. And also, I just want to say that all of the journalists that we have here on the show, while we were down and out and really bedridden, hearing some, being able to communicate with some of our amazing journalists that we feature here on the show, and the work that they do around the world, everyone from Dan Cohen to Patrick Lancaster to Mike Jones, Gavor Kalmassian, David Creighton in Canada, to all of these amazing journalists, shining a light on these stories that the mainstream media just does not cover. They do an amazing job, and I'm thrilled that our show here gets to bring everyone together, and we can try to make sense of this clown world together. So, yeah, thank you, everyone.
Say, Eva Bartlett, her channel got permabanned on YouTube for covering Palestine.
Yeah, yeah. Eva Bartlett, our good friend, great journalist, Canadian journalist, who's been, absolutely destroyed in the Canadian media because of her stance against. Imagine you speak out against Nazis and you get in trouble today in this day and age. Isn't that crazy? But that's the clown world we live in. So much, send much love as you can to Eva Bartlett on Telegram. Yeah, her YouTube channel just got shut down. Those scumbags. Thank you, guys. On that note, we hope you will see you tomorrow here at 4 p.m. Eastern time. 4 p.m. Eastern time is when we're live. Have a great night, everyone. And much love to all of you. Bye, everyone.